Congressman John Shimkus. John, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you.
I was kidding somebody the other day. I said, you know, John and I have been doing this interview so long and so regular, John doesn't miss. I mean, if he doesn't say I'm canceling, he says, can we reschedule? And we do. I was kidding one of my friends. I said, I actually talk to John more than I do my mom. My mom hears that. She'd be sad, but I don't think she's listening. So. How long has it been, John? What's your term? How long have you and I been doing these monthly interviews?
Well, it's only when I, in redistricting, you know, when I started coming down, like in 2001, for the 2002 member race against, you know, I've been thinking about it quite a bit, David Phelps. So that's when I started getting down in what I call deep Southern Illinois, you know, 13 and south. You know?
Right.
Like, people think Southern Illinois ends, you know, like in Springfield or St. Louis area. I mean, there's a lot more Illinois left to go. So I don't know when we started doing this regularly, but that's when I started moving around the area and started to really get to know the people and love the area.
Yeah, it was one of the few times I've ever seen somebody hold a redistricting map up to the microphone for people to see it. You were in the studio with me. You remember?
Well,
that.
it was pretty egregious. I mean, and we're going to go through that again in the state of Illinois. I mean, who knows however they're going to shake out, what they shake out, maybe with a new speaker that, you know, maybe they'll be a little bit less aggressive in map drawing, but I doubt it. I mean, it's until we pass whatever, a new law and set up a redistricting commission, you're going to have either side do that.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it is.
John, I don't know if you saw this, but the Census Bureau announced, I believe it was Wednesday or yesterday morning, data irregularities in the numbers that divvy up the congressional seats and the Electoral College, and they say they're being fixed. So we're fixing it.
Great.
Oh, and I'm like, oh, good. Here we go
great.
Again.
Here we go again.
Hey, now, you know what's easy for some people to forget, John, was who was in the congressional seat. Was Senator it was Congressman Durbin who then ran for the Senate, and then you ran for his seat. Is that right?
That's correct. And a lot of people down in your listening audience don't know that I ran against Durbin in 1992 in redistricting of that year. So I lived and breathed redistricting in my career. And in you know, politics 101, I mean, if you want to run from Congress, when's the best time? Bobby's the best time when it's an open seat. The second best time is when there's redistricting, when there's a new part of a district that the incumbent has to make himself known. So that's when I jumped in originally, thinking that, you know, Durbin really ideologically was no longer a fit. I mean, he ran originally as a conservative Democrat, believe it or not.
Right.
he changed.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get that message across in the 92 campaign. Plus, I mean, it was a whole kind of different world in which we operated then. But, I mean, listen, I work with him. He's tried to take me out. You know, I've supported his opponents. So we're like prize fighters in a ring, and we keep throwing punches, but we haven't knocked each other out. So so there's a healthy respect that we have for each other.
Do you think you'll be voting on this $908 billion stimulus package?
That's a great question. You know, I got to look at the exact. I think my biggest concern is, you know, December 17th, one of the pharmaceutical companies, not the companies, like a pharmacy, one of the retailers said, we're going to have to start charging for these COVID tests if the national government doesn't do what we've done now, which is pay for them. I mean, you go get a COVID test, it's free. Well, it's not free. Taxpayers are paying for it because we bought them. But so I think there's probably some provisions like that I think would still be important we don't put that burden on. Because I think it was like $117
Yeah, it's right there at 117. I've seen some of the prices, and I've also talked to the CEO of SIH on this very subject and say, people, we have this broken up, and some people may even actually get a bill for $34 after their insurance, but they don't have to pay that. Nobody has to pay, and some of that's been misunderstood. Right. And I note that there was some of that spending in there. But you've got the $908 billion spending bill, but you've also got a military spending bill that the president is questioning whether he will sign, and then you've got more spending because the government runs out of money December 11th.
Yeah, let me partial through that. The National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, is not a spending bill. It's an authorizing bill, which means we are then authorized to spend. But you're right. The omnibus, which will be the package of the 12 spending bills, that has to be done. Otherwise, we do a continuing resolution, and you know that has to pass for the government to stay open. We've been through that before. Then you put in this another COVID bill, this 908. I said at an event last night, I said this last time we spoke when I ran. We were talking about Senator Durbin, and I was pretty upset about the $4 trillion national debt back in 96.
Right.
We're going to spend over $4 trillion this year in deficit spending. To add to the whatever we got now, $26 trillion national debt. But this COVID thing is stressing everyone. I mean, wearing masks, not wearing masks, what individuals do. I believe in personal freedoms and liberties, but you know, communities are forcing small mom and pops to shut down, especially the small restaurants, and that's all over. And different areas are doing it differently, but there's a real economic cost to this. That if a government is forcing someone to shut down their economic activity, don't you think the government has some liability to help make them whole or at least afloat so that they can reopen?
Yeah, I mean, because that's one of the basic tenets of this country. It's yours. It's your property. It's your business. And the government can't tell you how to use it or to stop using it because that's how you make a living. That's really
a
basic tenet.
There's a constitutional principle called taking. The government can't take. And in other words, by forcing closures, you are taking the profitability of the business. So that's where those of us who are worried, or you know, try to remember the Constitution, abide by it. How do we, accept this argument? But we accept it by the taking principle.
It's interesting because we're talking about government shutdown, and said John and I have been talking for many years and regularly. And one time, and we talk in private as well. And I'm on the phone with John, and I'm just. I was complaining, but it was the B word is what I was doing. And I was talking about Crab Orchard Lake. It was during one of the government shutdowns. And I said, how do you shut down a lake, John? They've got these cones, you know, in front of the road. So you can't even drive up next to the lake. And John just goes, you know, if you go down there and do that, I can't get you out of jail. You understand that. I'm like, well, it never occurred to me to do that until now. But so, John, no, I can't. If you go down there and take your dog just because you want to and you've been told you can't, I can't do a doggone thing for you, okay? John gave me the riot act there. John, let's talk about this for a couple of moments. In the time that you've been there in Washington, I have a tendency to see things the items that are a little closer to our spot in time as being the substantial efforts you were a part of, like the tax cut. But I wondered, during all the time, it may not have been your sole effort, but you, and along with other Republicans in the House, biggest accomplishment that you feel that real ownership of?
Well, the easiest one, which most, you know, I think most people view me as a conservative Republican, and you know, by definition, except especially some of your listening audience would say he doesn't care about the environment, right? but even today, as we're negotiating some of these final bills, you know, I'm involved right now in provisions of a bill called the Use It Act, which is the carbon capture and sequestration for CO2. There's HFCs, hydrofluorocarbons, which are really major greenhouse gas problems, and we're trying to negotiate kind of a phase out of that. So then you do TSCA, the Toxic Substances Control Act, which had been rewritten, period. It was, since it was first enacted in 1976, that's the one Obama signed. That's probably my signature accomplishment. If you look from inside inside the D.C. Beltway arena, I mean, it really is a big thing on chemical safety that that we were fortunate to get across the finish line. But then you get a there's a lot of just everyday health and safety issues, child booster seats. Senator Fitzgerald and I did that. You know, I've got the 911 legacy of cellular 911 and then voice over internet protocol and digital and texting and all that other stuff that we helped create the government legislative package so that these things could happen easier. You have the, I mean, I told the story too to, a couple of days ago. There's a story about people standing in line to vote, and one person passed, had a heart attack. So the people in line ran into the school, grabbed the auxiliary emergency defibrillator on the wall, and they saved that guy's life. Well, it was my legislation that helped get those placed inside schools.
Right.
So, I mean, I've got enough to, and I'm. It's fun to talk about, and it's been a great run. I tell you, I really love my democracy work internationally, and you know,
right, monitoring elections in the European Union,
elections.
Right?
Some fair and free, and some stolen. I haven't done a lot of that, but I've done three, and then all the NATO stuff that I've done, trying to keep the alliance together. I do believe it's important. Trump has allowed our allies and really threaten them to do more, and they are. There's a success there, but this North Atlantic Treaty Organization is really a net positive, and that I've been happy to be part of.
All right. You just talked about stolen elections, and some people are saying that's what's going on today in this country. I mean, I've got people are texting in literally right now to say, you know, what does John think about the status of the election? What do you really think about what's going on? What's your thoughts here, John?
Well, I think, first of all, the public, if they are so, I mean, I think they're being informed by the media, so that should really cause them to be involved in elections, to be election judges, to be observers or judges, or actually, I'd rather them be judges, you know, in there, a Republican and a Democrat at the precinct doing it, right? And then you've got election judges who are watching all this stuff, bipartisan. They go to the county clerk. That's how our system works. That's that. First of all, I think if people are so fired up and think elections are being stolen, they better get, they better become election judges, you know, and start the analysis. So I've always said, first of all, I believe that there is election irregularities. I always talk about a county that had five people vote in a their address was a vacant lot. So at that level, I do believe there are a little shenanigans, but I also side with the fact that I don't think that there's enough of those that will overturn this election. But the president is right to be able to use the court system, which is constitutionally the arena to go to, if he feels that he has been aggrieved and that there is laws being broken. When we have to resolve conflicts in this country, we go to the courts. And so let him and his team put these facts out on the table. You know, and if there are, I mean, there's some video out there. It's very questionable. We should be able to know who that person is. And if they're doing what we think they're doing, bring them in under oath and put them in jail. Put them in jail and, you know, and find out what in the heck is going on and who did this. So I have no problem with us continuing to go down this route. I just don't think it's going to be enough to overturn the election.
John, I kind of got off track here for a couple of moments, and I'm getting ready to run out of time, and I don't want to do this because we talked about your positive notes. And I was wondering, because you talked about conservative Republican, right? And you and I were recently talking about national debt, which is $27 trillion as of the 1st of October, the firm figure that I have, okay? Is that the thing that you're most worried about? I mean, is there something that went undone, unaddressed, that you were frustrated because you couldn't get across the finish line? Is there anything that you think, this is the thing that'll be a stone in my shoe for the rest of my life?
Yeah, I mean, that national debt, and I'm part of it, because, you know, drive the hard bargain, do a thing like Bruce Rauner tried to do and drive the state into the ditch where you're trying to get, a balanced budget. That's really what Rauner was doing. But you know the pain that caused at SIU Carbondale, at these community colleges, the state workforce. So that's why it's so difficult to do that. And that's the same thing here. So do we keep the government open and do we cut the deal to spend more money? Or do we drive the hard bargain? That's by far a frustrating thing. The other thing is my work on nuclear waste, in that I cannot believe
Yucca Mountain
that we can't force the national government to comply with the law. I mean, I'm still incredulous that we have a law of the land that was worked through the legislative process, signed by a president, and then we've thwarted it. The legislative branch, the executive branch, in cahoots, and we're just spending money and getting nothing done. It's pretty frustrated. There's a lot of scars. Well, you get them too.
Let me ask you about that for just a minute, because that was on my list, John. Whenever you and I interact on social media, you post your interviews, something along that line, I dare sometimes to go and read the comments, and on Twitter, and I take a look at that, and I know you well enough to know. You got a lot thicker skin than I do, my friend, and that's without question. There is no debate. I mean, Kate had to stop me from, where are you going? I'm going to Springfield to kill this guy. It made some comments about me on your, I'll figure it out by the time I get there. All right. I know you've got to, if social media wasn't the vicious animal that is, Twitter, Facebook, on the list goes, would you have run for another term?
Yeah, I mean, I don't pay attention to those comments. I mean, I think I don't understand. I'm a Christian by faith, and you love God and love your neighbor. But there's not a lot of love going on in a lot of those comments, or at least respect. But that is tiring. But I don't read the narrative. They can call me whatever they want. If I don't read their comments, then they haven't really said it.
But they've also done this type of thing to you in public and in public appearances, John.
Yeah, they have. I mean, really, they need to get a hobby.
Right.
Their hobby shouldn't be tearing people down. They ought to get on the ballot. I mean, that's kind of how, I used to say that, and then someone did. and they are a pretty good candidate. I don't get it. I don't understand the mean and the viciousness of our era.
And vicious is the right word, too. Hey, we're running out of time. As I said once before, there's another item. This CURES money that was voted on and approved on March 27th is just now. Of course, the deadline was earlier this week. But this was not well done in the state of Illinois when it comes to disseminating this money. And left, I think, a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Well, and the Mike Boss, Rodney Davis, the Republican delegation was on this months ago, and we kind of got mocked by the governor saying, they don't know what they're talking about, and it was like, dude, man, we did this for a reason, and this money needs to get out, and it needs to get out appropriately. And that's the problem with the federal system, right? We don't want a nationalized government, right? We have a federal system where we have state control, and then we go down to local counties. But it's pretty inefficient. It's pretty inefficient. And another layer of government can kind of really destroy the intent of at least the federal government. And I think that's what happened in this case.
John, before I let you go, did I see you're going to get a Distinguished Service Award, or you already did, from SIUE?
You did not see that, and nor is it happening I don't know how you know that.
Okay.
They kicked it around, and I said, there's too much John Shimkus in the news right now, so let's pause on that, and let me teach one or two classes and see if you still want to do it after that.
Right. Well, okay. Well, I do my homework. You know that. I do my homework every day.
Man, I tell you, that was pretty deep. Good for you.
I always do my homework.
Maybe reconsider.
All right. Well, okay, before I let you go, I got to tell you, it's been a real privilege working with you since 2001. Gosh, can it have been that long? We were both a great deal younger, and I was a great deal thinner as well. Now, and one of the most important things that has gone on between you and I is the fact that you trust me. I find very often when guests are invited for the first time, what are you going to ask me? I'm not going to ask you anything you shouldn't know. And John doesn't do that. John never calls up or one of his staff, nobody ever says, what are you going to ask the congressman? He trusts me when he comes on that I'm not going to ambush him. Not a weird, wicked, mean, showboat thing. Maybe a little weird occasionally, but I can't tell you much the trust, your trust has meant to me personally, John.
Well, it's back at you. I, been a good relationship. I hope that we've helped, your listeners, kind of get an inside look at what's, what my perception of what's going on. And, I still believe in our government. I believe in representative democracy. But I do think people need to, roll up their sleeves and get involved and quit bitching.
Right. And there's the promo cut. Well, John, once again, thank you. And I know, and the other thing is, John sends me a Christmas card every year. So I've watched his children grow up, and I always send him a note going, got your Christmas card. Kids look great. It's cost you. This has cost you on not a monetary level. This has cost you time that you could have spent with some great-looking young men, too, and your wife. So, people talk about, what goes on, how much you get paid, and all these things. But there's a cost that that's hard to qualify.
Yeah, 3-1 is when I first got elected, and I'm leaving, and they're – that three-year-old and that one-year-old is 28 and 26. So the 26-year-old was asked by a staff member, how was it hard? And he basically said, it was my whole life. I mean, I don't know anything different. So he did his best to be around, and he had to work. So when he wasn't. So it is. But they've turned out well. Very proud of them. And so I guess, in the end, that's all you really can ask for.
Congressman John Shimkus. John, once again, thank you so much for your time. And here's the other thing. John and I have been talking, and he's offered to come back as an expert analyst on occasion. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
Yeah. Right? Yes, sir. Stay in contact.